The 8 Lines of Work, Tactical Workplace Survival Strategy. Author Praise for Owen. Why I wrote this book. My wife started a career as a banker shortly before we got married, while I started my career as a trainer for bankers, as a rookie trainer, a year into our marriage. I'd left paid employment in the year 2003 set up an initiative that has gone on to transform several young people in the Ajegunle area of Lagos State, West Africa, into becoming exceptional leaders in various sectors of the Nigerian economy and beyond. My experience in the first organization I ever worked was a cultural shock because I was from a family of blunt people where you say things the way they are without any form of diplomacy. I was literally running away from home because I didn't want to work in the bank that my uncle was trying to get for me. So I eventually got a job in a not-for-profit initiative, which was quite a well-structured setup. But no sooner had I settled down than I noticed what is now called office politics in Africa. What it meant was that you could literally get by once you are in the good books of the boss, and I saw that play out in a strange way. My wife Tosin started working in one of the fastest growing banks in Nigeria way back, and one day she was literally in tears as I went to pick her up from work. The problem was that she was labeled as having attitudinal issues. She was said to have attitude problems simply because she sought to correct what she felt was a wrong attitude to work in some of her colleagues. And she had a strange upline who had the habit of talking to people anyhow, including shouting on them. In no time, Tosin was already talking about quitting a job she loved, no thanks to an environment that had become cultural, as against the professionalism it was designed for. As she expressed the frustration each day, I started to take a deeper look into the work culture and the structure of many of the indigenous organizations, and I started seeing similar patterns. It dawned on me that if my wife could have the same problem I had, simply because of our high work rate and commitment to building the brand that has hired us conscientiously, then there were bound to be a number of others like us who could have been going through the same situation. I won the battle in my first office simply by applying what I'm about to share with you, because in no time, became the star of the organization and eventually the head of my unit. The template I created worked so well that I could get away with anything I wanted to get away with, even though I refused to do that because I knew whatever we gave to our boss would be given back to us in the future in good measure, pressed down and shaken together. It was not fully formed when I was developing it. But as I started to show my wife some of what I had applied, she started to build better relationships with others, and she started to win. By the time I started training some of the banks that were my clients back then, this became one of the favorite models for many of the new entrants, and some of them had gone ahead to produce incredible results with it. I'm totally not sure if this will work for you if you live in a developed economy, but there are principles in here you can adapt. One major error many of us make is to fail to understand and observe and accept the reality of the environment we have found ourselves, so that we can discover the rules of engagement that is required to win in that environment. Our bid to stick to our ways and insist on the known and force it on a system that is fully formed is the reason a lot of intelligent people become frustrated with the system at the end of the day. Have you not noticed something around you, or have you not noticed someone around you whose competence is not as high as yours, but seem to have been getting promoted faster than everyone else? Our immediate response is to attribute all sorts to their rapid rise and create a disempowering narrative out of it. But the question I've always asked over the years is, what do they know, so that I can apply and win as well? One of the earliest principles I mastered is the territorial principle. which says that you are a king in your domain and in control of the laws, but in another person's territory, you must become a subject and play by the laws of the land, or else you may land in their prison. It has taken me so long a time to put this together, but I'm so certain this will assist many dedicated people across Africa who can't seem to understand why they are not getting the desired reward commensurate to the efforts they're putting in. Competence must never be compromised, but superior relationship skills must be deployed to match your competence so that you can consistently win. The beauty of this book is that when it's embraced, it will resolve many of the complex relational issues at work, and productivity will go to an all-time high. It has been tested, and it works so well. I honor you. The Headlines of Work: Tactical Workplace Survival Strategies for the Workplace People by Praise Fuwe. Chapter 1: Understanding the Workplace. I was sleeping on the mat at exactly 8 p.m. in my office, Lagos, Nigeria, as there was a deadline my unit was supposed to meet. I was not done, but everyone else had gone home. Truth words, the order we got to produce those level of materials was impromptu, and it came from my overall boss. My boss was a woman that had become known as the last-minute annoying person, which simply means that she places orders without giving enough notice for anyone to plan. Trust me, she was a workaholic and one of the nicest bosses anyone could long for, but a part of her scared everyone. I had resumed that fateful day and planned my entire day when the order for 2,000 products came in at exactly 12:30 p.m. West African time. I knew there was no way we could deliver that in 24 hours, but then it was also impossible to say no to her at that level. So I got my team together and got everyone on their toes to start production. By 6 p.m., everyone was ready to go home, but I chose to stay to get the work done to a level, even if it meant staying back at work till the following day. Trust me, there was no insurance coverage, but I never bothered because we needed to deliver. It was the voice of James that jolted me out of sleep, and I remember clearly what he said. Is it your father's business that you want to kill yourself over nothing? You better go home and leave their work for them. After all, how much are they paying you? I woke up and smiled and told him not to worry about me because I knew he doesn't know what I know. I was raised by an Anglican priest, and he was one of the most hard-working men I ever met. Everyone who worked with my father could testify about his doggedness and dedication to his work, and he always told us, whatever is worth doing at all is worth giving your all to, such that it becomes so hard to erase your legacy. So I quickly learned from my dad a few things about the workplace, because the only thing on a lot of people's mind about the workplace is often a place to earn enough to give them the quality of life they deserve, which is often far from the truth. What did I find out or discover about the workplace? Number one, the workplace is a platform. It is often not a place to make money as a starter. It is not, however, bad if money comes immediately, but a place to prove yourself and build an incredible track record that speaks in your absence and will deliver value you want on the long run. My first salary was 15,000 naira, which was about $41, and trust me, it was not what I bargained for, but it was a good entry point for me to prove what I could do, and it did work because I built an incredible legacy that has stood the test of time and set me up for the outrageous fees I now charge. One thing I often tell entry-level professionals in my training is to realize the access the identity card of the organization they work for can give.
that they may never have been able to ordinarily get without being hired. A lot of my trainees have built amazing relationships by simply understanding this reality. Imagine if everyone you hire is simply out to prove what they can deliver, as against being fixated about what the organization is able to pay. Number two, the workplace is a school where you write exams on a daily basis and where the results will determine your ultimate placement. It is my personal belief that every task you are given at work is life's exam that determines a lot about your future. So it is no coincidence that the first thing you would notice about everyone who worked or has ever worked with me in our organization is their selflessness. The workplace was a free school for me to learn what will equip me for life. And life will pay back in good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, whatever I give to my boss. So there was not a single thought about stealing, let alone defrauding the organization, even though I made a lot of money for the system that could have been converted into personal use. Number three, the workplace is a refinery. Workplace could be a refinery where you're subjected to so much heat that is intended to build character into you. It could also destroy you if not well understood, because you could be formed into another person that you may find it difficult to recover your true self at the end of the day. I have seen many happy-go-lucky people become so sad and petty, no thanks to the hostile working environment that they found themselves. Their inability to navigate these has led many of them into a state where they even transfer the work aggression on their family members. Number four, the workplace is a workshop where you're an apprenticeship being prepared for your freedom. You could be made to do jobs outside what you were meant to learn, but it's part of the apprenticeship process. And remember, what you're paid in apprenticeship is a privilege, not a right. While this may sound absurd to many of us, I don't think it should to an entry-level person. Imagine the level of training some organizations expose their personnel to. I have friends who may never have been able to personally afford some of the courses their organizations send them for. Imagine how many organizations that send staff for expensive courses. Imagine how much they spend to train free will personnel who can complete the training and move to another organization. In traditional apprenticeship, it is often the mentee who pays the mentor, but in this case, you are paid, in some cases, a premium, yet they take responsibilities for your training. A lot of people have left those organizations to go and set up successful companies. I understand that they trained you so that you can help them deliver on the bottom line, but those trainings are forever yours, and what has been learned can't be taken away from you forever. Every workplace also comes with workplace people, and in over 14 years of facilitating high-level training and hiring people for organizations, I have carefully observed the following groups in every organization. Group 1, the pesty sinker. This group of employees bring no innovation and creativity. They are just there to collect salaries. They face the job description and do it without anything extra. Their mantra is, "It is not my father's business, so why should I kill myself?" Group 2 is called the begging noble. This group lacks initiative and lack positive self-esteem. Their life is dependent on the job. So while they are not adding any value, they do everything to remain in the good books of the boss. They are loyal because their sustenance is gotten from the boss. This group gossip a lot and love to be seen around the heroes. The third category is a group called the thrifty mercenaries. This group can produce amazing results, but they have no form of loyalty. They go for the highest bidder. Promotion is based on result, not about character or leadership skills. The next group is called the chatterbox. This group belongs to the much talk, less action. They raise so much hope, they win, but no rain. They are the first to come up with all forms of amazing ideas, which they are not prepared to be responsible for. They excite you without necessarily sustaining the excitement. The next group is called the lost coin. This is the right guy, but in the wrong place, so it looks like a problem. He makes a lot of mistakes. You may need to redirect him. He has a solution that has been applied in the wrong place. Imagine a system personnel that is positioned at the front desk of an organization, while the one who loves to relate with people is positioned behind numbers and system. That's the lost coin. The last group is called the heroes. These are the guys who ultimately build an organization or the industry. They are vision driven and they're there to build the organization and the sector. They live with a sense of assignment and would literally give anything to deliver on the task. They finish the assignment before taking their leave. They walk by what the ordinary people don't see. There are basically two breeds of heroes I have observed, and I've named them the Sparky and the Builder. The Sparky sparks off the process and shows the way to sustain it, while the Builder sparks it off and sustains the change. Who are your workplace people, and what categories do you belong? My name is Praise Fowowe. You can actually order for this training for your personnel. It's a 2-day workplace relationship skills training. Or you can also request for this book by sending a mail to info@iampraisefowowe.com. I honor you.